Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good, Russ. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here, watching the conference finals tonight. We're going to get right to it. We're going to welcome in Mike Ogiello from Hockey Buzz. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am fine. Watching the Tampa Bay Lightning beat the Penguins. One step closer to the Leafs getting the 27th pick in the draft instead of the 30th.
Before we get into all that, I'm just curious, which of the NHL Network commercials are your favorite?
Oh, God. Well, if I ever see carved turkey again, I'm gonna take out my carving knife and carve somebody's head off. That and the Jack Daniel's honey commercial is just the most annoying thing. But it's just, I mean, could you?
But wait, it seemed like you were mad at Flo too. Are you mad at Flo? Does she bother you?
No. No, I just said if I was stuck on a I would rather much rather be stuck on a desert island with Jan from the Toyota commercials than Flo from Progressive. I would look for the nearest cliff to jump off of if it was Flo from Progressive.
Dude used to have on was it those DZIB commercials, whatever the heck those things were, resale sites. Oh my God, those ads used to make me want to punch myself in the face watching those.
Oh, they're still on NHL Network, but the girl dyed her hair and put on about 15 pounds.
Yeah, something. Yeah, exactly. So just all like
right,
you
so
know,
all right. So let's get off commercials. We're going to talk about actual hockey now, and so let's talk about the Maple Leaf situation. I mean, we're all pretty sure they're going to get Austin Matthews first. But then after that, there is some flexibility. They have another first-round pick. They got the first pick in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they're going to do with that? Like, my feeling is, I know they like Alex Nylander, but they're going to need him to fall a little bit before they can get serious enough to try and trade up and get him. But I don't think they're going to trade that first pick in the second round because I think they're targeting Tyler Parsons, the goalie from London, for that. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I've been told that, you know, the organization doesn't want to trade up, which I don't, you know, and it's their philosophy not to trade up, that trading down is more in their philosophical bent. And I don't think that's true. They have 12 draft picks this year. They have 7 second-round picks in the next 3 years. So, I mean, there's just so many picks that you can have. I personally think, you know, they're going to get Matthews with the number one pick. And even if they had picked fourth, they were going to get a top forward, either, you know, Laine, Puljujärvi, Tkachuk, whoever. That the second pick, they were going to go for a defenseman. And if they're going to go for a defenseman, I don't think they can trade up high enough to get, you know, Sergachev, Ylevi, Chychrun. But they might be able to get to that second level, like Jake Bean or McAvoy in the middle of the first round. I think that that's what they're going to do because in spite of the fact they had a good draft last year and drafted a couple pretty promising defensemen in Travis Dermott and Andrew Nielsen, I still think that they need a couple more defensemen in the pipeline because they're going to probably start clearing out a few of their you know, guys who are borderline prospect, borderline NHLers, a guy like Stuart Percy, I think, is going to probably end up elsewhere next year. So I think that they're going to need to replenish the defensive core. That's why I think they'll take a defenseman with the second first.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to concur with Mike. As soon as he mentioned Jake Bean, that was kind of the guy that I was sort of, if Toronto's looking for a guy that could potentially be in that spot, lower in the first round, getting into potentially mid-round if they decide to move up. Bean, I think, would be a really good fit for them. Obviously, he's a pretty good – we know he's got – I've watched him enough, obviously, because of, you know, targeting Travis Sanheim. And since he's been with the Flyers pick, I got to, you know, see Bean play and pretty impressed with him. And, yeah, I would say, you know, he's really good in transition. He likes to jump into the play. He'd be a pretty good fit for Toronto if he ends up being the target for them.
Yeah, it definitely gives him a chance to get like a top four pairing guy, because I'm not even sure Dermott will be that. He could be, but he might not be. But, you know, Bean's still got to work on his own end, but I do like all the other offense. I agree with that. And the fact that he wasn't at the under-18s, or he was but broke his foot, maybe does give a couple teams pause, and maybe that does set him up for the Leafs. But what do you think about the goalie Parsons for Toronto, Mike, or just them looking for a goalie? Because we know they're searching for one.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of depth in the organization right now, goaltending-wise. I mean, you have Sparks and Bebo at the AHL level, and Bernier at the NHL level with 1 year left in the contract. I think that it's a no-doubter that they're going to draft a goaltender at some point with one of the 12 picks. It's just a question of whether it's going to be, you know, early on the second day with that first pick in the second round, or maybe wait a little while. And as you know, Russ, this is not supposed to be a deep goaltender draft. So if they're going to get
right.
the guy that they want, they'll probably have to take him, you know, a little earlier than you would expect. But my approach to the goaltending here is I think they'll draft one, but I also think they're probably going to end up trading for one. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think that they can trade Bernier because, you know, he didn't have a good year. He's making over $4 million. His value is down pretty low. Next year is going to be a transition year, and what they might try
mm-hmm.
to do is just, you know, if the team is better in the second year under Babcock, hope you can get a good year out of Bernier like you got out of Reimer, and then ship him out at the deadline. But I think that they're going to go for a trade for a goaltender, and not a Freddie Anderson, not somebody who's going to cost them significant picks or prospects. I think they're going to go for like a young guy who's maybe been a backup in the league who could be a starter, and I the guy I've targeted is somebody like Calvin Pickard from Colorado. If they go for somebody like that, he could be the 1B to Bernier's 1A and then step in if they trade Bernier or if they just let him go to free agency the following summer.
Mike, I'll ask you this, and there's been some scuttlebutt about, you know, the Flyers goaltending situation between Steve Mason and Neuwirth. Neuwirth obviously had an excellent playoff run. There's been a little bit of scuttlebutt with regards to whether or not the Flyers might attempt to move off one of those goaltenders and sort of maximize their would Neuwirth be a guy that would interest Toronto? I'm not advocating that the Flyers should trade him, but would he be a guy that would interest Toronto?
I'm not sure because Neuwirth, in Washington, in Buffalo, in, you know,
mm-hmm.
throughout his career, he's basically been that 1B who's never really, you know, jumped to the 1A level. I mean, honestly, I think they would take a stab at Mason. I mean, Mason's got
mm-hmm.
history with the London Knights, with the Hunters.
He does.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, that would make sense. And, you know, I know that in talking to Russ and Eklund and a few other people that sometimes Mason has been criticized unduly in Philadelphia. And I think
mm-hmm.
that, you know, he I think he's a veteran enough guy who could handle Toronto. And I think he's a good enough goaltender that if he was in Toronto, they would support him. So I could see them going after a Mason.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that Mason was on the team with Kane and Gagne, and I actually went out there and scouted him a little bit and was really impressed even, you know, way back then. So it could be a long shot one because of the association for sure. So then looking into the free agent offseason, I mean, if they are looking for a goalie, why didn't they do what Chicago did and pick up the best Swedish goalie, the one who's, you know, from the Swedish Elite League? They could have signed that guy for an ELC. Like, why wouldn't they go that route?
Have you heard of Jonas Gustafsson?
They've
been down that road before. And I'm not saying that Jonas Gustafsson is a failure. We know he had that heart problem, and
yeah,
you know, he has
yeah.
been a decent NHL goaltender, but he isn't anywhere close to the monster moniker that was, you know, talked about. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, Lou Lamoriello's history is to go after a goaltender, whether it's in the draft with like he did with Marty Brodeur or by trade with Corey Schneider. I think that, you know, after having Reimer and he played well, but he got injured and his lack of durability always comes up, and, you know, he's now basically a backup in the NHL. And Bernier has not jumped at the job in 3 seasons. And Garrett Sparks, if he ever is going to be ready to be an NHL goaltender, he didn't really show it this year, but they may give him another chance. I just think that you know, they're going to do something when it comes to a goaltender. It's just a question of what. I think they'll, like I said, I think they'll draft one. I think they'll trade for one.
Mike, in terms of sort of looking forward here with the with what the Leafs are potentially going to be doing beyond, you know, the goaltending situation this offseason, what are some of your other target areas for the Leafs that you they think that is really high priority?
Well, it's funny because defensively, you know, they bring in Nikita Zaitsev from the KHL, sign him to a one-year deal. From the, all the talk, you know, not to say he's going to be given a top four spot, but that's the indication is that, you know, he could be paired with Morgan Rielly or paired on the second pairing with a Jake Gardner as a right-hand shot. You know, that they're going to give him every opportunity, being a guy who played 7 years in the KHL, to, you know, take a big position with the club. They have a ton of guys who you could consider 5-6s. I mean, everybody from Stuart Percy to Scott Harrington, Victor Love, Renat Valiev, Corrado. I mean, there's a number of guys who could fit in as 5-6s, but they really, I think they need another top two pairing defenseman. And I don't think right now any of their youngsters are ready to jump in, or anybody who is currently in the organization who will be pressing for a job could jump up to that level. So, you know, I continue to think that they'll look in the trade market maybe for a guy who's an RFA, like a Tyson Berry or a Shattenkirk, who's 1 year away from being a UFA, or maybe a Jonas Brodin in Minnesota who may be on the way out if they want to sign Matt Dumba to an extension. Somebody like that. I think that they need to get somebody who is young enough, maybe locked up on a contract or still on entry level, that they can bring in on defense. I mean, I think defense is the area they really need to upgrade the most, because forwards, they're really deep at forward.
Okay. Let's switch gears and give some thoughts on tonight's game. It was certainly interesting. It wasn't a bloodbath, but boy, there were a lot of injuries, and it just seems like now it's just like, not that guys are getting targeted, but they're just, they're playing for keeps. They're finishing their checks. You know, Kunitz went knee to knee, whether it was on purpose or not. You know, hurt Johnson temporarily. Bishop goes off on a stretch. Callahan certainly gets a dirty hit on Letang, and I don't think he's going to get suspended. I don't even know why he wasn't kicked out.
No,
there's like a rule 41 basically says.
No, exactly. No, I'm agreeing with you, Russ. I would assume in the circumstance that he should have been. I thought it, looking at that hit, he was going to get suspended, and the fact that he got the 5 minute boarding major. I still think it's going to get. I do think they're going to at the minimum give it a look. But
yeah,
whether or not anything else is going to come as a result, they're going to give it a look. But I don't know anything beyond that. And certainly for those people who, you know, and other coaches through the prior two rounds with the Penguins who thought that the Penguins were being given favored calls. We might see the flip side of that in this series.
Well, I was almost surprised that Mike Sullivan didn't, you know, do the whole gamesmanship routine and just keep. I mean, I know Letang is their most important guy on the blue line, and maybe that outweighs, you know, gamesmanship. But you keep him out the rest of the game, and you have him miss practice, and you probably get Callahan suspended for 2 or 3 games. Now that he comes right back in the second period, he may get a fine. I mean, that unfortunately, that's the way the NHL does things. I don't agree with it. To me, it's whatever the penalty is. If that's an illegal hit, then
you want to know what you want to know what the set fine is for that? $100. That's what the rule is.
Okay.
I will say this, is that one of the ways, if you are going to play a little bit of gamesmanship between days, we can potentially see, even though the player may have come back, you can always potentially say, you know, the player, you know, we're holding him out of practice today because he's feeling the effects of that hit. And that word filters up to Toronto, and that goes into the decision-making. So if they hold out Letang for practice, that could potentially tip the balance in favor of Callahan getting a game or two.
Yeah, I think
the game was fascinating,
though.
Go ahead, Mike.
We have two days in between games 1 and 2, I believe, in this series. So, yeah, it's enough time to send Letang to Pittsburgh Mercy Hospital, you know, just to send a signal to Toronto.
he wasn't 100% when he came back, so that wouldn't be shocking if that stuff does happen. But it was an interesting game, too, because Vasilevskiy played great. I mean, I know we all like him, and it's not to say that he's better than Bishop, but we all kind of expect him to have Bishop's job someday, and now he's really going to get to audition here and made some great saves at the end. But, you know, it's just game to game. We're going to see big changes in this series. And so, like, next game, now they don't have Bishop at the very beginning. If Vasilevskiy has to start it, it's a different mindset. And so we'll see. You know, Pittsburgh definitely got some, you know, mediocre performances from some of their better offensive players. I mean, everybody's defense played well, both teams. There wasn't any issue there. And Tampa, you know, Victor Hedman was a monster. So, you know, it's good first game won. I think everybody probably thinks it's going to go six or seven anyhow. But, Mike, was there anything that stood out as maybe, like, different or shocking or, you know, anything like that other than, you know, just the guys going down?
Well, I mean, Duran was, you know, I mean, I've seen him play enough times not to be like completely shocked by his skill set,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it was just, I mean, that the goal he scored, the pass on the early in the first period that set up a great chance that Murray made an unbelievable save on. I mean, just the skill level of Duran was really impressive. But I honestly think that, you know, Cooper, he may be resistant to changing anything after winning the game, but he's going with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen. And now with Johnson, I mean, you hope that, this knee situation that, you know, kept him out, and you know, he came back a little bit in the second period. I don't know how much he played in the third. But you may need that extra forward and have to go down to 6 defensemen, because if his knee acts up in the middle of game two, you can't go with 10 forwards 2 games in a row.
The thing for me is I'm looking at right now this goes back to even to the previous series, is how Pittsburgh has kind of gotten how their circumstance right now in terms of scoring. I mean, I remember Barry Trotz was talking about, you know, I mean, Crosby's been good. I mean, 10 points in 11 games. But, for me, it's been fascinating to watch. Obviously, Nick Bonino's having, you know, a really excellent playoff for them, and the fact that they're able to sort of, other teams may be able to target Crosby and Malkin, but Pittsburgh's got so many other weapons potentially available, yet in this game, Tampa played them extremely well in terms of gaming them defensively and knowing who to key on. And I think the interesting thing was as well, I'm going back to what we were talking about, you know, about whether or not there was targeting going on. I thought I saw something where they said that Pierre McGuire picked up on Callahan saying to Letang going over to the bench, be expecting that, get, you expect that all series. You're going to get that all series. So,
That's bad.
I mean, you expect that at this point of the year, but it's like, we're going to, you know, this is one of the extra upward levels of physicality that we're going to see that Pittsburgh's certainly going to be expecting in this series.
To be overt about it. Yeah, the thing is, though, and here's the thing about the targeting. So, you know, when Letang goes out, we all say, hey, well, it's not so bad, he came back. But, you know, for the 5 minutes they had their power play, it was totally dysfunctional because Letang's used to running it. And they could never, in that 5 minutes, figure out the right guy to run it. And that turned out to be the game.
That's also been an issue for Pittsburgh too throughout the playoffs. So their power play has had issues throughout, and if you take one key cog out, it really looks like a mess, as you said.
Yeah, and you're talking, you have a defense that, you know, Mata has, you know, he's come back from being concussed. You know, Letang has a history of concussion problems and takes that hit. He does come back, but, you know, I don't think he was really at 100% for the rest of this game. I mean, it makes sense tactically for Tampa Bay to really beat up on the Pittsburgh defense, and you know, because I mean, what they've been doing in the second half of the season is activating offensively with their speed, and the only way to slow these guys down is to wear them down physically. And the one thing that Tampa has as an advantage over maybe the Rangers and over Washington is I think they can keep up pace-wise, skating-wise with Pittsburgh.
You know, the one thing that's interesting about Sullivan is when he was with the Rangers, he was supposed to be their power play guru, and for like a season that pretty much held, and then for the rest of his time there, it didn't. And it was a sore spot for Ranger fans, so we'll see if he does it, if he is able to correct it now as a head coach and with some other input, because that does seem to be a weak spot for him. What do you think, though, guys? I think by next game, we'll probably start seeing Tom Sestito again fakely warming up and doing some you know, chanting and talking to some of the guys over at on the Tampa side, because it just seems like the series is going that way already, doesn't it?
Can Tampa sign Colton Orr to sort of counteract that?
He's retired. Fantasy camp, you know that.
Yeah. Fraser McLaren there, he needs an NHL contract. But, yeah, I honestly don't think that's going to work this time around, because I think Tampa's a completely different team than Washington. I mean, Tampa really doesn't have – I mean, Callahan's a pest. He's a guy who hits.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have a Tom Wilson. They have a lot of speedy guys, and, you know, their third and fourth line has, you know, the Paquettes and the JT Browns, who I think they're just hardworking players. The one thing I noticed, though, because I was paying particular attention to Kessel – is, you know, Kessel was able to sort of fly above the radar in the first two series because he's so fast, and he was playing in a third-line role, and he was matching up against guys who were slower than him. Tonight, whoever was playing against him was able to keep up with him, and the frustration level in a couple instances, especially he missed a great chance right before Hornquist scored the goal.
Just to stop you there, you know, my mother once in a while will see me and say, oh, it doesn't look like you're sleeping, because, you know, you see, like, circles under somebody's eyes. And didn't it look like Kessel looked like he had no sleep? Like, it just looked he just had almost, like, black eyes.
Well, it was almost like, I mean, and I've noticed the body language of Phil Kessel from all the years in Toronto. It's pretty interesting when a guy in the middle of the play, you could just see him, like, sort of sag and sigh, which he did after he missed this glorious opportunity, and then Hornquist scored. He's a very expressive guy, and I know that I think it was the CBC broadcast was making a point about how Kessel's not, like, wheezing on the bench now like he used to in Toronto, and that must mean he's in shape. And I know for a fact he's in the same shape that he was in Toronto. He's not.
Yeah. No, there's no question. He wheezed in the last series. What were you going to say, Ann?
I also was going to say, and I did sort of notice that myself, and you kind of wonder, beyond just the physical shape aspect of the thing, you know, he has never been he's never been in the postseason, certainly never been this deep, and you wonder whether or not he, you know, going into this, whether or not he's, you know, does a player psych himself out, get himself overly excited? Maybe, as you said, if he's got dark eyes, less sleep, and didn't get proper rest going into this, and now, as you said, going up against a Tampa team that has the speed that they have, he looks a step slow, and I wonder if, you know, these are things we don't know behind the scenes, obviously, but it was, in my mind, noticeable, and I'm glad you brought that up, Russ, because, again, I have to wonder whether or not, you know, he's kind of maybe psyched himself out a little bit in that first game.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it could be something like that. So, Mike, what are we expecting for tomorrow night? Because, you know, the one thing's clear, we could all talk about our picks and everything else, and most of them are horrible because just the action's been completely wrong. The only thing I've been able to get right in these series is what these teams sometimes need to do to win or sort of correct their game. I've been able to correctly do that, but as far as, like, picking winners and stuff, it's just ridiculous. But Sharks Blues does look like it's going to be interesting. Right now I think we're looking at two hot teams, so I don't think we're going to talk about that choke factor anymore that you'd like to bring up, but what do you think?
Well, I think they're two pretty even teams. I still have questions about Brian Elliott. Maybe I'm the only one out there because
he has gotten through
two rounds. But, I mean, you know, he had a bad game in Game 6 against the Stars. They pulled him after the first period. You know, Allen came in. He comes back in Game 7, and he really didn't get tested that much against the Stars. So, you know, I know that he played well against Chicago, but if you look at the matchup there, I mean, Martin Jones, this is his first time in the conference final being the number one goaltender and being, I mean, it's inexperience versus a guy who I think has experience but just really hasn't stepped up in the playoffs before. So, I mean, I think that's the most key matchup. But if you look at it, I mean, St. Louis is deep on defense, although I don't think Shattenkirk and I don't think Bouwmeester have played that great. And in San Jose, I think that the key is getting that secondary offense out of Thornton and Marlowe. I mean, you've seen Couture, you've seen Pavelski come up big. You know, guys like Joel Ward, who always plays well in the playoffs, comes up big. If they can get contributions from Thornton and Marlowe, which they have so far, they might be.
Yeah, and I'm going to stop you there just for a sec. I just saw some info on Twitter that Bishop's x-rays came back negative, but that doesn't really mean anything because they're x-rays. The next day, they'll probably MRI them just to make sure.
Cause, right.
You know, could be a knee issue, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think, I mean, both St. Louis and San Jose are pretty deep up front. I just noticed, you know, in the last couple games of the Dallas series, like Tarasenko sort of tailed off a little bit. He wasn't the force that he was against Chicago and early in the Dallas series. And with San Jose, you know, they were getting offensive contributions throughout, but I think that Thornton and Marlowe they're not central players anymore. That's Couture and Pavelski, but they still have to produce. And if they can produce secondary offense, I think San Jose could be unstoppable.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with Mike with regard to that. That they get if they're able to get rolling with their secondary scoring, no question, I think San Jose is going to give them everything they can handle. I do think that, and he did bring up obviously the point of Shattenkirk and Bomeister sort of not getting on track. That's another concern actually from San Jose.
Yeah, it's a concern of mine too, for sure. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and if they can get themselves on track here in the conference finals, that could make things even tougher for San Jose to get traction if those guys really begin to get underway. Guy, obviously, I key in on a lot is Paul Stastny from the Blues.
Mm-hmm.
His face-off ability, I think, is something that I want to certainly make sure to keep an eye on as well. The goaltending matchup's a fascinating one. Again, going back to going back to Jones versus Elliott, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Jones, again, as you said, we want to see. You know, it's fascinating to watch him after what San Jose, you know, paid for to acquire him, and it was one of those things in the offseason where we were just like, okay, guy's been a career backup. Let's see what wasn't 100% necessarily on board immediately with the cost of the trade, but. It's obviously paid enough dividends. He provides the Sharks with a lot of confidence in what he does in that. And again, I do believe that I have the Blues in seven in this series. I think it's going to be an outstanding series between these two teams. We're going to be interested to see who could break through. I do think though that if St. Louis is able, if their D is on point, then I think they can win this series. But I think it'll be really tight.
I mean, we're really in uncharted water, though, because we have four goalies with no Stanley Cup experience, not a ton of playoff experience. Elliott certainly has the most. They're mostly young, other than Elliott. Like, this is just it's a weird group now, Mike, and this is something where we're not used to seeing it. We only have about 2 minutes, so I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, no, and I know I'm not going to go down the choking road here, but the thing is, it's like we're in uncharted territory because these teams have never done this before. You know, you San Jose has always found a way against L.A. or, you know, whoever they matched up in the first round to not come through. This year they have. And St. Louis, I mean, you go back, L.A. twice, Chicago twice, Minnesota once, out in the first round, and now everything has come together. I think they benefited from the fact that Chicago was weakened, you know, by, you know, their defensive depth wasn't as good. You know, their goaltending wasn't as good as it usually was. They weren't as deep at forward, but, you know, can't take the victory away from them. And they were playing Dallas, who didn't have Tyler Seguin, but they're there. So now they have to seize on the opportunity. And, you know, St. Louis has Alex Steen and Laterra and a couple guys who I think could step up a little more, especially Laterra. Laterra really hasn't been any kind of on the radar offensively in the playoffs, and I think he needs to step it up a little bit.
Yep, that's fair. I mean, all really good points. I think the one thing we could all agree on is, you know, Jonathan Drouin's job is safe, which I always thought was laughable. Anthony thought it was kind of not going to happen either, where he might go somewhere. And, you know, he just keeps picking up steam. And, you know, we're seeing some pretty special play. And it's interesting. We'll see what happens here. We're going to have a completely new Stanley Cup this year. That's for sure. So we're going to kill it there. And that's going to be it for Off the Post. Mike, thanks for coming on. We'll catch you on Hockey Buzz and on Twitter and complaining about commercials. And we'll see everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
There's been a red card, but for who, Chris Kamara?
I don't know, Jeff, has there? I must have missed that. Red card? No, you're right, I saw him go off, and I thought they were bringing a sub on, Jeff.
Make sure you don't miss a thing with a Now TV Sky Sports Day Pass as the season reaches fever pitch. Big moments? No contract. Get in. Get your pass from nowtv.com. 18 plus, UK only. Content streamed to compatible devices. Full terms at nowtv.com.